and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Special Report. Donald Trump has made another headline-grabbing selection for his cabinet, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., as Health and Human Services Secretary. Our health reporter, Alexander Tin.
Kennedy has already laid out a number of sweeping proposals in his so-called Make America Healthy Again platform. That ranges from entirely replacing the FDA's roster of nutrition scientists to upending federal support for water fluoridation.
And this follows the announcement that Matt Gaetz has been tapped to be Attorney General. CBS's Olivia Rinaldi on the selections.
They're looking for disruption, and they're putting people in these agencies to lead them that are distrustful of the agencies themselves.
Democratic Senator Dick Durbin says many would like to see the House ethics report into allegations against Gaetz.
We cannot allow this valuable information from a bipartisan investigation to be hidden from the American people.
CBS News Special Report. I'm Cammie McCormick.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. Volunteers gathered at McMillan Library last night for the VRC training with United Way and Wood County Emergency Management. Ben Eberlein with United Way led the training.
So tonight was just a refresher training for our volunteer reception center members, basically to stay up to speed on everything that we need to do in the VRC in case we are activated.
This twice annual training prepares VRC members in the case of an emergency situation that would require a large amount of volunteers to be activated.
In the spring, when we do our full training, we will run through a full mock simulation. And so all the volunteers will get to take on one of the roles in the VRC and basically pretend and go through that simulation as if it was really happening.
The in-depth training will happen in early April 2025. School board member Julie Tim has filed a notification of non-candidacy for the 2025 spring election. There will be two open seats for the election in the spring. The other incumbent is Troy Beyer. Anyone interested in becoming a candidate will need to file all necessary forms no later than 5 p.m. on January 7th. The time for gathering with families is drawing near. Along with that comes the chances of getting sick. The Wisconsin Department of Health Services is encouraging people to protect themselves against respiratory viruses this holiday season. Only 22% of Wisconsinites have received a flu shot this season, and only 11% have an updated COVID-19 vaccine. Officials say any time is a good time to get vaccinated, but you should get those vaccines at least 2 weeks ahead of holiday gatherings. This gives your body time to build protection against these viruses. This can protect you from getting really sick and can help prevent you from spreading illness to others. I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI News.
The Bucks win a thriller. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks were down by 18, but came roaring back to force overtime on the way to a 127-120 win over the Pistons last night in Milwaukee. The Bucks were shorthanded. Doc Rivers.
No Dame, no Chris Middleton, no Bobby Portis. So we're down to one living point guard on our team.
Giannis finished the night with 59 points and talked about what he told the younger players filling in.
You know, don't take these moments for granted. It's easy for me to kind of fold and say, guys are out. But no. We at the end of the day, you are here to do a job, which is compete.
NFL, the Packers face the Bears in Chicago Sunday. I asked Lucas Van Ness, who's going to replace Preston Smith on defense after he was traded to the Steelers.
Regardless who's here, it's always been a next up mentality. Whether it's myself, Mosby, Cox, JJ, we're all ready just to kind of fill in and help where we can. And that still stays the same.
That's Packers defensive end Lucas Van Ness with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Cloudy this evening, some breaks in the clouds overnight, a low in the upper 30s. For tomorrow, partly cloudy, a high in the low 50s. Clouds return for Saturday, a chance of rain Saturday night, then sunshine's back as we look into Sunday. Right now, it's 48.
bringing a house of pain.
Backside pressure, down he goes, inside the 30-yard line.
To a game day near you.
Picked off by Wisconsin, and the Badgers win it.
That's how you create a program. That's how you create a team.
Join us Saturday. The Badgers take on Big Ten newcomer Oregon. Our coverage begins at 4:30 on your home for Wisconsin football.
Here on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time. Former Wisconsin Badger and NFL player Brady Ewing joins us to preview the big matchup at Camp Randall. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for Up North News Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to Midday Magazine for this Thursday, November 14th, 2024. Have your host, James J. Mayloff, here. In part two today at 4:30, we're going to talk to our friend Anna Mitchell, natural resource educator with UW-Madison. We're going to talk a little bit about wildlife and some other things. Right now, we have with us on the phone lines our new friend, Kristen Conway. She is joining us from Out Loud MC. Let's talk a little bit about what Out Loud MC is with Kristen and find out more about that great organization. But before we do that, Kristen, I gotta ask a couple of hard questions. First, number one, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you for asking. It doesn't seem like a hard question, but sometimes you get asked that one and you're not expecting it. You don't know how to answer always. Of course, I certainly want to ask you about you. Would you mind, Kristen, giving us a little bit of your origin story, a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So, yeah, I grew up in central Wisconsin, went away for school in the big city of Minneapolis for a few years. And then, like a lot of folks, I came on back to be closer to my siblings and my parents. I've been living in Wausau now for, 24 years. And I've been working in nonprofits. That's kind of been the trajectory of my life. So I started, if any of you are familiar with the Roller Derby League around central Wisconsin, that's something that I started a few years ago when I was a stay-at-home mom.
Mm-hmm.
I've just been living here. I've got four kids and a spouse over in Wausau and working for nonprofits.
Well, and we appreciate that work a lot, especially we're fans of roller derby around here. So we love the work you put into that and certainly appreciate anybody putting so much of their life and their time into our nonprofits. We appreciate that, Kristen, and you and the team. And I want to talk about the team and the group and the people and the work and message and reason, really, for Out Loud MC. Can we let the audience know what Out Loud MC is?
Sure. So Out Loud MC stands for Marathon County, the LGBTQ Center. We're a new organization, started the paperwork back in March. By May, we were organized enough that we had 11 board members. We were able to participate in both Wausau and Stevens Point Pride events. We had tables set up. We spent the first couple months just collecting data from people around the community, wanting to know, what types of things they would look for in an LGBTQ center, who would come, what types of events do you want? Do you want support groups or just to get some data so we could decide on our programming. So, we've just been, don't have a physical space yet. We're really just kind of, like I said, we spent a few months defining, trying to figure out what we wanted to do, how we wanted to do it, what the community needed. So that was the first thing.
And Kristen, well said, and I appreciate the way you worded that, especially because you teed me up. I wanted to get into, you guys did the homework on this. You didn't just open this center. You found that the community could use this, that this had a need. It had a place in a gray area that we weren't covering in our society.
Right. Yeah. And part of, so my job that I get paid for allows me to go to Pride events. So for the last 2 years, I've traveled two different Pride events around the state. I've been in La Crosse and Eau Claire, Green Bay, Madison, Milwaukee. And part of that, too, is while I've been there, is talking to the people that are running, there's an LGBTQ center in La Crosse, there's one in Eau Claire, there's one in Appleton, there's several down in Madison and Milwaukee. And I really got to know the people that are running that and talk to them. And, you know, what is everyone says their most popular program involves gaming. So that was a fun little thing that we're going to be implementing. But, you know, just talking to them and finding out, you know, what their origin story was and what needs they're filling in the community. So that was really helpful, too, in the planning process.
It's good to hear. And certainly, you know, the more resources, the more minds you can go to, ideas you can have, the better sharing of information, the better for them, for you guys, for all of the above. And I do want to take a moment, Kristen, to just because especially people that haven't done the kind of work before and everything, and I only know a little bit about this, but to pull off what you all did, to get a nonprofit started in that amount of time, that's no small feat. Nicely done by all of you. That's really impressive work.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it was really a team effort. Once I got the first I just held an informational meeting. It was just me and my laptop at a business here, and I was shocked by how many people were interested just to come and find out. I mean, there were 45 people there, and I was expecting maybe five. So there was a lot of interest in the beginning. And then, you know, like I said, I've done this before with the Roller Derby League, which was on a much smaller scale, but I knew how to write the bylaws and what paperwork we needed and where we needed to file and what those fees were to pay for that. So that was but it was a real team effort. Once I got a few key individuals on board who were motivated, like I was, it really came together pretty quickly.
And Kristen, I think anybody, no matter what age they are and how you're living, you can see where we are going as a world, as a country, where this is becoming more and more a part of our daily lives, more and more a part of our just way of being and way of life. And it always has been. It's always been there. It's been there since the dawn of time. It's just now being more seen and being more open and honestly, more inclusiveness and more representation. I want to note one thing here. Not to speak for you, just for myself here, Kristen. I'm a straight guy. I am nothing unordinary, but ordinary at the same time. But I see a need from people like myself to stand by the rainbow, to stand by the LGBTQ plus community, because I know this as a mixed kid. It's not very surprising for me to be behind civil rights issues. You would think I would be. There's a certain bit of interest in it for me. You know, it makes sense. It makes sense that if somebody under the rainbow umbrella would be behind this. But for people that aren't under that rainbow, it's that much more important for us to stand by these things, too. It means something when we believe in these causes, when we stand by these. I had an uncle growing up who was homosexual, and he died from HIV. This was something he believed in very much. It was something very important to him that, yes, it means something for a Jewish person to stand behind Jewish causes, but it means so much more when we have people from other faiths standing with them. It means something more. And so to have individuals in our community, all types, standing by this, it's not only wonderful to see and encouraging, which we could all use a little bit more of in our day-to-day lives, but it's also, again, this is where society is going. There's no rewinding this. There's no putting the genie back in the bottle. That we're only going more forward with this. And it's important to have organizations like Out Loud around for that.
Right, absolutely. And that's something, too, like I struggled with in the beginning because I don't identify as LGBTQ. And the reason I think I got interested in this and started, you know, doing the advocacy is because I have two queer kids. And, you know, having a 14-year-old here, I needed support. I needed resources, and there was nothing.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where this stemmed from is I need to stand up for my kid, and I need to fight for services for my kid, and I don't know where to go or who to talk to or what the process is. So that's kind of what one of our goals is to create this resource. And that's one of the first programs we started was a parent support group.
Yeah. That tees us up perfectly for that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just to get, you know, the support group. And we've had only one meeting. We have our second one tonight. Mm-hmm. But the first meeting went really well. I met a wonderful group of individuals and we shared stories and This was pre-election, so I'll see what how tonight's goes post-election. Mm-hmm. There might be a different vibe in that room, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. You know, people that I'm talking to are petrified, mm-hmm. you know, are getting passports type of petrified because yes. they're not sure where they're going to go here. So. Mm-hmm.
Understandable. And all the more, what great timing to have that parent caregiver support group going on tonight. It'll be from 6 to 8. It's great to hear about the turnout and the good reception that you got the first go around. Let's hope for more of the same tonight. Where does this take place, Kristen?
Well, like I said, we new nonprofits, you know, can't just get a loan and start a business. We have to rely on donations. Mm-hmm. So we don't have a physical space yet. We're using Rise Up as an organization here in Wausau that has a space that are loaning us their building when we need it for meetings and events. We also are using other spaces. We have a Thanksgiving chosen family and friends meal coming up, so that we're utilizing a different space for that. So we're just kind of begging and borrowing spaces where we can find it until we're starting the process to look for a space, and then probably after the holidays and the new year.
Well, I will not shy away from it to the audience. Part of having you on with us is hopefully bringing some attention and some awareness and some funds to that, and maybe we can get you guys a place.
Oh, yeah, that would be great. And, you know, we have, like I said, we've got 11 board members, and I was just looking after the election, too. We had really a lot of people who have volunteered to be on committees or to one thing we want to get up and running is a peer mentorship. You know, there are a lot of individuals, my friends here, you know, the Gen Xers like me who said, yeah, I grew up here and it was rough, but I stayed here and I came back, and they want to connect with the younger generation. The queer kids that are coming up to say it does get better. And this is what my experience was, but I made it through and you can too.
Well said. We're speaking with Kristen Conway from Out Loud MC and talking a little bit about the events coming up. Again, a great one going on tonight. Parent caregiver support group happening from 6 to 8 tonight. You also have another couple of great events happening in the month of November here. I see a transgender non-binary support group for 18 plus kids Friday, November 22nd from 6 to 8. What will this event be like?
We kind of, there was a group that was working here for a few years back called TransFam that was a little bit of the same. It was trans adults and their families. And, one of their members is now on our board. So we're kind of combining those two. So this will be, a peer support group for transgender and non-binary support for folks over the age of 18. And then we're hoping there's some insurance questions once you start working with youth that we're going to work through, but we're definitely going to be doing some groups that are just for the youth focused.
It's a great idea, and it's such a, I imagine, a key part of Out Loud. Well, it is a key part of Out Loud, as you gave us your own personal story there, which I really do appreciate you sharing. This is so, we're not certainly want to help adults and want adults involved in this, but this is so much about the kids and the teens and giving them not only support, but, you know, guidance and help in any way they might need.
Right. Yeah. One of the things when I started and kind of looking at what our mission was, and because I know kind of the area, I wanted to make sure that we had support for why we're starting. So I dug into some data like Marathon County, and I'm not sure if over in Portage County and Wood County they do this, but like they do a life report, and they kind of get statistics. And, you know, going through the last data life report, which was in 2021, it showed that LGBTQ plus kids are, you know, more at risk for depression, anxiety, for risk of suicide. And so, I mean, we have that data. So that's a good thing, you know, definitely to put it in our business plan so that we can say, like, this is the data shows that, you know, our kids need support, especially our queer kids need support through this.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something we're trying to work on.
Mm-hmm. And on Wednesday, November 27th, a chosen family and friends meal will be happening from 2 to 6. This seems like I think they talk better over food. I think I know that we all know that food really brings people together. But I think that something like this is a really nice idea. And it could be even a nice icebreaker for some.
Right. Yeah. And we just had a little really informal last minute get together on Saturday, kind of a community building event, and we had so many people come in, that were strangers to each other that sat down and played cards or playing board games. And that was really cool to see. And like people walked in and said, I'm usually socially awkward. I don't know how long I'll stay. Well, they were there after I left. They stayed and met a bunch of people and they were playing cards. So that was a really, really important thing. And people need that now. They need community and they need to be around people that support them.
To that point, I want to encourage people to bookmark these events, make plans to attend them, and you can find out about them and more at outloudmc.org, outloudmc.org. We'll give that email address again before we wrap up. And I want to get into, before we get too far down the line as well, Kristen, about how people can get involved, because we may have people out there listening to this, and maybe they have family members or children that are part of this, but maybe they're not, and maybe they just want to help. Maybe they just want to be a part of things. Are there ways for people to help people to get involved in this with the center?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. We have, we're just starting committees, so we did... You know, like I said, there's 11 of us that are very dedicated and very willing to do the hard work that we've done in the last few months. And now I'm like, okay, now we can separate. We've got programming starting, so we're going to be doing a fundraising committee to work on some ideas in order to bring in funds. We're planning for a prom in the spring, which I know it seems it's not even winter yet, and we're planning for spring. But that's definitely going to be something where we're going to need a lot of hands on deck to assist with the logistics of that, and just more ideas from people too, that what sorts of outside the box ideas do you have for fundraising or for events, something that we can really bring in a lot of the community, because even though we are primarily for LGBTQ individuals, we really want to, we know the importance of community. And like you said earlier, having allies around and rallying and being able to speak up is good.
And Krista, we mentioned that this is a Marathon County-based organization, but people from Wood and surrounding counties are welcome to this?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, we're just primarily based in Marathon County. And I have friends in Stevens Point who have said to me, we need something like this here. And I said, well, I have the paperwork. I can show you how to do it. I just don't have, I can't be in two places at once. So, yeah. I mean, that might be something in the future too.
And it does speak to the need for this, as we were touching on in the beginning of the conversation, this organization exists for a reason, and more like it or an extension of it will be following. I have no doubt in all of our counties and not just here, but around the country. We'll get into, I want to wrap up with some stats about that. But before we do that, I do also want to mention volunteering. Volunteering is a great way to put back into your community, to put back into an organization like this. It looks great on a college resume as well, to all you seniors out there and everything, juniors and seniors, I should say. Volunteering is another great way to impact things and to help.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And there's, I mean, like I said, right now we're all kind of volunteer run. A lot of us are lucky in that we have flexible jobs, real jobs that we get paid for, so that we can, you know, I can take this call in the middle of the day and someone can run and make copies, you know, as needed. But we definitely have, there are just small things that we could definitely use help with, especially when we're searching for a building and people that, if you have connections or you know somebody who can assist, I am always willing to, I mean, that's how you and I found each other, right?
Yep,
we
had
a friend of a friend.
Mm-hmm.
So we're always, you know, looking for that community connection.
And that's so important. That's such a key part of this, too. We've kind of touched on it throughout the conversation, how important communication and community truly are, not just to this, but to our better future and into a better future for our kids and for the youth, which is what this is all about as adults, is setting things up to make things better for others. I wish I could remember it verbatim, but the wonderful Native American quote, we don't plant trees to watch them grow. We plant them for others, too. That's what a lot of this is about. And as we're wrapping up, I also wanted to mention that there are resources out there for people. The outloudmc.org website has a great list of those. There is the Trevor Project, which has been doing some great work for decades, really. GLAAD is there as well. You can find out more about that. Natural Center for Transgender Equality is also there. There are links and there are ways for you to find out more about those, especially for those, as I've talked to and I've found from friends over the years, it even in the climate that we have nowadays, and maybe because of the climate we have nowadays, are not always, it takes them maybe a beat to be able to go to some, an event like this, or to even call you guys, or to reach out, or to any of the, or to volunteer some of that. So sometimes your first step is just on your own, you and your laptop, diving into this and getting more into the topic and seeing what Out Loud is doing. You again can do that at outloudmc.org. And while you're doing that, I want to remind everybody that there is a great newsletter on there, Kristen.
Yep, that's a new thing, and it's just we're trying to do a monthly, here are the events we're doing. I also try to include like a kind of a resource of the month, some videos, you know, for learning purposes, because part of our mission too is to educate the community. Important days right now is Transgender Awareness Week, so just highlighting those important events that are coming up. And then we have a Ask Us Anything kind of part, which surprisingly, nobody has done that yet, but we're, you know, always willing to ask questions and or answer questions, especially hard ones, because sometimes people don't feel comfortable answering them, and that's why we're here. So,
yeah, and you know, these things take time to build. You know, you guys just got going here, and as you we bring more awareness and attention to the organization, you're going to get those questions. I have no doubt. I've worked with over the years a lot of nonprofits that are just starting out, and this is how it usually begins and works. And before you know it, you guys are too busy. I have no doubt in my mind, especially with something like this, that the community is going to be not only asking those questions but showing up at these events and having your back. We really cannot encourage you enough to. One of the ways you can do that is certainly supporting them on social media. You guys have a Facebook and Instagram accounts?
Correct.
Yeah. Be sure to throw into your search bar on those sites, Out Loud MC. Just throw that in there and you can find it. I was able to. You can also go to outloudmc.org to click right to those resources and those links, I mean, and as well as all the other resources and find out about the events and how you can get involved like we did today. Kristen, I can't thank you enough to you and your team, that board, for doing something like this and doing so much for our youth and our communities. We appreciate you. And thanks so much for joining us and putting up with my questions.
Thank you for having me.
You take care, Kristen. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Sounds great. Thanks.
And we'll be back with more Midday Magazine right here at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR. We are locally grown radio.
Hey there. It's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. A lot of financial chatter is focused on the stock market. Is it up? Is it down? Is it a bull market? Is it a bear market? The Dow just hit a record high. But how much should people like me and you really care about these daily updates? The answer? Not very much. Most of those daily highs and lows come from small-scale events that just don't mean that much to the broader U.S. economy. And the stock market is not the economy. For most of us, long-term growth is what really matters for retirement. Now, if you are one of the richest 10% of Americans who own 93% of all the stock, you can ignore this message. But for the rest of us, we're going to get more done by keeping an eye on our spending and savings than we are by paying attention to Wall Street. For more practical money tips, visit workmoney.org. Till next time, take good care.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids' home of Nightlight with Peach Schwabe.
Join our advertising family on WFHR and WIRI and see how radio can help improve awareness, revenue, and staffing for your business. I'm Ashley, and it's my mission to help our area businesses thrive. Call me today, 715-496-0710.
Do you worry about how much someone drinks?
Do you feel angry or depressed most of the time? Do you feel neglected or unloved?
Do you feel that if the drinker loved you, she or he would stop drinking?
If you answered yes to any of these questions, you are not alone.
Not everyone trapped by alcohol is an alcoholic.
Families and friends are suffering too.
Al-Anon and Alateen can help.
Call 1-866-200-0223 or visit alanon.org/help.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. The historic Weinbrenner Shoe Factory building in Marshfield will no longer be utilized in making shoes. The city is looking for someone who will continue the history of the magnificent 89-year-old building. It's listed on the National and State Registers of Historic Places. The Weinbrenner Shoe Company will be relocating in early 2026 to their new facility in Marshfield. The city would like to immediately transfer the property to a qualified developer or team for a dynamic reuse project at that time. In response to a growing teacher shortage, Governor Tony Evers has added a grant program. Here's Stuart J. Waddles.
$1 million is going to nonprofits to boost the state's educational workforce. The funds will support local organizations in their efforts to identify, prepare, and certify new teachers for Wisconsin's classrooms. The move comes as the state deals with a surge in teacher turnover, mirroring a national trend.
President Joe Biden recently apologized on behalf of the federal government to Native American families and communities for the country's history of sending indigenous children to boarding schools. The U.S. government removed Native children from their families by force and placed them in boarding schools, where they lost connections to their culture and language. Children were routinely beaten for not speaking English, and many were killed. Wisconsin had at least 11 of these schools. This program started in 1819 and ended in 1969. Cheryl Crazy Bull leads the American Indian College Fund.
I feel like when you acknowledge something, you take a step toward healing that. You can't really have reconciliation unless people acknowledge that harm was done.
A bill making its way through the U.S. House would create a Truth and Healing Commission, similar to efforts in South Africa after apartheid. I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI News.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. When it comes to films opening wide this weekend, it's a bit quiet, sort of like the calm before the storm. All eyes are on next week's openers, which will showcase Barbenheimer 2.0 or Glicked, which is Wicked, and Gladiator 2. But there is one film opening wide this week, and it follows a new trend of badass Santa movies. Red One stars Dwayne The Rock Johnson, Chris Evans, J.K. Simmons, and the awesome Bonnie Hunt. Johnson plays the head of security at the North Pole and teams up with bounty hunter Evans to find Santa Claus, who has been kidnapped. It's usually an inside job. The first suspect would be Mrs. Claus. Red One is getting less than 40% on Rotten Tomatoes, but don't let that stop you. It looks like pure holiday fun, and at PG-13, it's fun for the whole family. The Bruce Willis film, The Fifth Element, is getting a re-release this weekend, but in a limited capacity. The film is from 1997 and also stars Ian Holm, Gary Oldman, and Chris Tucker. If you feel like staying home, new movies to stream include Megalopolis, Saturday Night, or Michael Keaton's Goodrich. Let's go to the movies. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Cloudy this evening, some breaks in the clouds overnight, a low in the upper 30s. For tomorrow, partly cloudy, a high in the low 50s. Clouds return for Saturday, a chance of rain Saturday night, then sunshine's back as we look into Sunday. Right now it's 48.
Victor deployed for the first time to Afghanistan in 2003. At 4 in the morning, my phone rang. They said, "I regret to inform you that your husband was wounded in action." Victor sustained a moderate traumatic brain injury. I was doing school full time, and I was also then caring for Victor. One of the most important elements of caregiving is taking care of yourself. I just didn't want to forget that I also had goals and that I also had a life. What I did is I challenged Victor to meet me halfway. There are almost 6 million military and veteran caregivers across the nation. We have our own journey, and we can fulfill that journey at the same time that we are helping our loved one.
Visit aarp.org/caregiving for a free military veteran's guide to navigate your caregiving journey and better care for your loved one and yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Pat Kreitlow.
Coming up on the show, Pat Kreitlow still on vacation, but we got Luke Mathers sitting in, and I have a feeling there might be a couple tangents. Join us.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6.
Welcome, everybody, to Midday Magazine for this... Nope. I didn't like that. Didn't like it. Just trying to rush it. Welcome, everybody, to Midday Magazine for this Thursday, November 14th, 2024. Have your host, James, here, and we're joined right now by our good friend, Anna Mitchell, natural resource educator with UW-Madison Extension. Anna, always good to see you. Thanks for being here.
You're welcome. Good to be here, James.
How have you been?
Oh, I've been well. Recovering good. From a cold, but... Tis the season.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. Glad to hear you're recovering. And glad to see your topic today. We're going to dive into wildlife habitat and movement, a topic that this time of year feels like a really good time to topic.
I try my hardest to make sure they're timely. Yeah, so today we're going to get into wildlife corridors and crossings, which is a topic I don't know if a lot of people know about.
I don't think so. And I'm pretty certain we have not covered this ourselves with you or with others on this topic.
Yeah. So before we get into wildlife crossings and corridors, it's really important to actually just talk about habitat and movement of wildlife, right? As we all know, wildlife move in order to complete their life cycles. It does not matter if they run, swim, or fly. Wild animals, at the end of the day, have to move to find food, water, shelter, and breeding sites, right? So we all know animals move. I'm sure we've experienced it, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Those wild turkeys, man. That's
man, you don't want to hit a turkey or a deer, right?
No.
So unfortunately, you know, as our human populations grow and we're expanding, we see a lot of fragmentation in wildlife habitat. And when I say fragmentation, you can just think of like breaking apart of, right? So our cities expand. You know, we have agricultural fields, and so we take out wildlife habitat, right? So we're fragmenting natural wildlife habitat.
We actually experience this almost every day right here in our building, or across the street, I should say. We have a eagle's nest across the street over at the artillery over there. And when we first moved in here, this eagle would be flying around all the time. I thought it was one of the most beautiful things. It would distract me. Squirrel! You know, I'd be distracted by it all the time on the air.
Right.
But I did a little homework on this because it seems so active.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if that's what eagles were or not. They tend to be very active when they're in an area, a rural area where they have a hard time finding food.
Yeah.
And it sent me down this rabbit hole, this eagle hole, if you will, of just more and more learning about eagles and how much of their habitat has been taken up.
Yeah.
And how that is our bird. That's the symbol of our country. And that's an animal that is not living its best life, really, because of some of this fragmentation you're talking
about. Yeah. And, you know, just to get off a little side tangent.
It's what we're all about.
Right. Eagles have actually made a really huge comeback in their populations, which is really cool because of habitat restoration projects. We'll get into that earlier in a little bit.
We've touched on it a little bit with the recent Jefferson Award winner and some other things that have been some great movement being done by people with eagles.
Yeah. It's really cool. But yeah, like I had said, there's many factors that cause habitat fragmentation. It is just the nature and reality of our growing populations, right? We have urbanization, we have road development, fences get put in, etc., right? Many man-made barriers that impede with wildlife movement, habitat, etc. So you might be saying, wow, that's horrible. And we do see it, right?
Yeah.
So what's being done to fix it? Well, there's two really cool things, I guess, that are being done to fix that, and that's improving wildlife corridors and creating wildlife crossings. So before we, I think we can dive into, like, what is a wildlife corridor? What is a wildlife crossing? And we're going to do a little visual exercise here. So we'll start with wildlife corridors. So a wildlife corridor, technical definition of it is that it's an ecological corridor that's part of a landscape that allows animals to move between larger areas of habitat. Okay, so now play along with me. Visualize in your head two separate pieces of forest. There's nothing connecting these pieces of forest. Now, in one of the forests, you have deer. The deer in this forest are running out of food, but they need a way to get to that other piece of forest. But there's nothing connecting those pieces of forest to give them a good movement area, right? To give them safety to move.
Yeah.
Now, visualize a little piece of woods that's connecting those two larger chunks of forest. And this little piece of wood is allowing movement for deer. You know, it basically turns into a deer highway. That deer highway, air quotes, right? That is what we call a wildlife corridor.
Wow.
Yes.
I love that.
Yes.
That is really cool and nicely done. Oh, that was very good. I'm not too visual. I got it. I saw it.
Good. Yeah. So corridors are basically the habitual routes that animals use based on either learned behavior, seasonal influences like migration, right? Seasonal influences and just inherited traits, something that they learn from their parents, right? They can often be identified by landscape features that have good paths of movement, including like topography, elevation, vegetation type, and physical barriers, whether that be roads or rivers. Mm-hmm. So corridors, basically just a path for an animal to get from one spot to another that provides them safety. They're going from one spot to another to find food, water, breeding ground, etc.
Really, it's the story of our country doing this. Mm-hmm. Our country was built on roads. It was mm-hmm. built on paths. Mm-hmm. It was built on building these things, connecting. Our community right here in Rapids is connected by a lot of paths yeah. and a lot of things.
Yeah.
There's even the ATV route that connects communities and stuff. So this is just an extension of that, it feels like.
Yeah, kind of an extension of that. Just a wildlife extension.
Exactly.
Yeah. So...
It's natural. It's part of it's just a natural, beautiful thing. Too.
It is the natural part of the ecosystem, and corridors have been around forever. Well, because of urbanization and our growing population, a lot of that really, really important corridor area has been fragmented, which means that animals can't move, right? They can't take their little highway, right? They can't take their corridor from one spot to another. And those spots aren't just... you know, spots that they're like, oh, you know, this is good habitat. Like, it's vital to their survival in order to be able to take that corridor to new habitat. So we've got some really, I'll talk in a little bit about some really great restoration projects for those corridors that are going on throughout our country, too.
Cool. Anna, one of the things that I noted, this was a long time ago. It has to be at least 10 years ago or something. I saw something out of a random article, like a Good News Network mm-hmm. kind of thing, where there was this place in Texas that they were struggling with a lot of the population, the animal population mm-hmm. there, and they were losing a lot of it, and they didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And they decided to basically build this crossing.
Yes.
And I'd never seen anything like it before. It is one of the cooler things I think that human beings have come up with for yeah. animals. I'm really looking forward to hearing more about this.
Yes, great segue, James, into just wildlife crossings. So crossings are different from corridors. We might get in the weeds a little bit here, but I'm going to try to keep us straight here. So a wildlife crossing is a human-built infrastructure like a bridge or a tunnel that is specifically designed to help wildlife safely cross a man-made barrier. Mm-hmm. So we're going to do a same visualization. Mm-hmm. You see, you know, visualize those two separate chunks of forest, but in between them now is a road. Mm. Well, there's no corridor there because there's the road. Mm. So how are the deer going to move from the piece that they're in to the other piece of forest where they need to get to the food? Well, one strategy is let's build a bridge over the road. Don't think about a bridge that's paved, right? This mm-hmm. bridge has grass, has trees, has other vegetation that matches the forest, basically is just a way for those animals to cross over the road. So we're not impeding human traffic, mm-hmm. right? And those animals can now get to that other piece of forest. So that bridge that's been created to allow for safe movement for these deer, that is what we call a wildlife crossing.
Mm-hmm. I've done a little bit of research in these just because of that, what I found mm-hmm. that day and how I've just always kind of kept an eye on this and thought it was really interesting. Yeah. It's something that I feel like is only a matter of time before it's very common right. in this state and other Midwest states.
Right. Yeah.
And one of the things that I noted from it too was, well, I come from a construction family, yeah. so I see something like that. I'm like, well, how much did that cost?
Right.
What did it take
right.
and everything?
Right.
They were able to, you know, kind of look at this and say, well, how much were they spending on cleaning up dead wildlife
yeah.
or what they were losing in wildlife
yeah.
and how much this cost? And it was an easy decision for that board to make. Oh, this is much cheaper way of, you know,
right.
Not solving this problem, but, you know, helping
mitigate. Yes.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah,
yeah
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I thought that was really cool. Another part of it that I saw, too, and this is more of a recent thing. Some of these are actually underground bridges.
Yes.
Sometimes they do that. It depends on the land and the kind
yeah.
of, you know, structure you're working
and
with.
And the animal, the animal's
yeah.
habits are, too. Yep. So you know, our little visual was a bridge. But, yeah, like you said, James, there are tunnels. Sometimes even culverts
yeah,
act as
man.
This. It you know, it just depends on what your wildlife population is, kind of what their mode of transportation is. There's a lot of really unique examples of this that I'll get into in just a second.
Just one other really quick thing. They're beautiful.
Oh, yes.
Like, they're really cool looking. They're a nice little attraction. They're almost a kind of a cool thing to see. They're not now eyesore or anything like that.
No.
They're like a beautiful little addition to these roads.
Yeah, it's something that like strikes your curiosity when you see it. You're like, what is that?
Yeah, and then
you know, it's something that I think we're helping the animals maintain their natural behavior while not impeding with human movement and our day-to-day lives. You know, this is like the coexist, right? We are literally creating something that can help wildlife and humans exist and go about their normal days without negative interaction, right?
I grew up seeing Cubs and White Sox fans live next to each other and put up with each other. If they can do that, we can do this.
Oh,
we can
yes.
coexist. We can coexist with our animal kingdom.
Yes, we can, James. Yep. So crossings, like we had said, wildlife crossings, they can be underpasses that enable wildlife to cross underneath roads. They can be overpasses that may, you know, help wildlife cross over roads. There's wildlife friendly bridges. There's a lot of different really, really cool examples.
Mm-hmm. So what about the differences between these two things,
yes.
Anna?
Okay. So here's where maybe we'll get into the weeds a little mm-hmm. bit. So crossings are the routes or areas or corridors. I'm sorry. Corridors are the routes or areas of habitat where animals use to move between larger areas of intact habitat, right? So crossings are those man-made linkages between that habitat. Mm. So if a corridor is where animals naturally move, mm-hmm. where would you want to put a crossing? Probably right where that natural and that you know, long-lasting or, you know, the corridor where the corridor has been for a very long time. Mm-hmm. So where we fragment corridors, if it's viable, that's where we can put a crossing.
Yeah.
So you can have a crossing in a corridor.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
That's
kind
of cool. And I imagine for some places, vital.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
needed. You got a lot of different animals that travel a lot of different ways.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
That's quite interesting. And so this is more of one of those things. This is a certainly a case-by-case, zip code by zip code kind of thing with what areas even would need these, would be benefited by these, and what type of ones that they would use.
Yeah.
Are there examples of corridors and crossings we can touch on?
Yeah. Yep. So some corridor examples in Wyoming, there's actually a 125-mile corridor. So this is the natural travel path, right?
Yeah.
125-mile corridor that pronghorns or antelope, some people know them as antelope, undertake each spring and fall. Basically, these antelope migrate 125 miles each way between the Grand Teton National Park and Pinedale, Wyoming. Mm-hmm. So there's been some restoration projects to help improve that corridor area. So the path that they're taking from, you know, whether that be the where they stay in the spring to where they go in the winter. So it's really interesting to see that those pronghorn antelope, we don't really think of those as
animal.
A migrating species,
no,
but they are. Yeah.
And so this is another part of this that I enjoy, and I'll admit too to the audience, I enjoy every time we get together. It's the info inside the info.
Yeah.
You know, with the things that we learn that it's cool to be learning about our habitats and these different crossings and corridors, but to learn something like that about our animal kingdom is just also really cool. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
My old stomping grounds has done something similar to this, the Burnham Wildlife Corridor.
Yeah.
Beautiful thing. I've seen pictures of this. I've not gotten to see it in person yet, but I've seen pictures of this.
You know, and I'll be honest with you, I did not know that the Burnham Wildlife Corridor was a thing until I did a little bit of deep diving myself. So the Burnham Wildlife Corridor is a 100-acre landscape within Chicago's Lakeshore Park, and it features native prairie and woodland ecosystems. And what's really unique about this corridor is that it provides safe passage to about 3 million migratory birds during migration season. So this is in the heart of Chicago, and it's providing safe passage for migrating birds, but also habitat for so many different animals that we see who can thrive in urban settings, like raccoons and coyotes and turkeys. You know, so it's providing more than just a corridor. It's providing habitat for other animals and species as well.
And I brought up the Sox Cubs things earlier in part as a joke, but also to bring this part of it, bring it back to this part of it too, because this is one of those things, almost 100% of the vote is behind this, yeah. Chicagoans and enjoying this. It has been a welcome part to the city.
That's cool.
And I think of cities like Chicago, Milwaukee, yeah. Madison, Minneapolis, Midwest cities that could really benefit from these corridors and crossings.
Yeah.
It's great examples. And to have one, you know, not only that close, but some others that we'll bring up in a bit, really needed as far as we're trying to promote these and
yeah,
talk more about
yeah.
these.
I mean, we're in a central we're in a highway, I guess, for migrating birds, right? We don't really have a lot of large mammals in our area that migrate, but we have a lot of birds
yeah.
in our area. So thinking about that, you know, that's a corridor.
Yeah, yeah. Wyoming's got another great one too.
Yes, Wyoming in the Red Desert to the Hoback area, they have a mule deer corridor that supports the longest mule deer migration in the United States, and that's 150 miles one way.
That's pretty cool.
So mule deer, that blew my mind. Yeah, I learned this a couple of years ago. Mule deer, when I think of them, I'm like, oh yeah, they're in the mountains, et cetera, yeah, prairies yeah. and grasslands. No, they migrate. Yeah. These mule deer in Wyoming migrate 150 miles each way between the Red Desert to the Hoback.
It's another deer hole I'm going to go down. Just another rabbit hole I'm going to run down. That's very interesting. That's something.
It is, yeah.
What about some examples of wildlife crossings?
Yeah, so the wildlife crossings are so cool. I get very excited about them. They're really unique. Yeah. So since 1996, there's over 40 wildlife crossing structures that have been implemented in Banff National Park along the Trans-Canada Highway. So these wildlife crossings include 6 overpasses and 38 underpasses. And there's almost 50 miles of wildlife fencing that's been built to kind of direct wildlife movement towards these crossings. So if you're ever up in Canada and you're on the Trans-Canada Highway near Banff National Park, look for these wildlife crossings. They're going to be bridges. Some of them will be those overpasses and some of them will be underpasses. If you don't think you'll have the opportunity to get over there, look online. They've got some really beautiful pictures of these crossings in Banff. It's really cool.
It's really interesting. And it gives you a good idea, of too, of what because I think it's just a matter of time. When we bring these to our communities, something to welcome.
Yeah.
To the community. Again, I think that they, as far as infrastructure wise, just make things even more interesting and beautiful yeah. and everything. And it brings awareness to so much of this.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people like myself out there that are learning right in real time so much of these things and how important they are to our communities.
Right. Yeah. Another really interesting example of a corridor is down on Christmas Island, which is located in the Indian Ocean. They have an annual migration of millions of red crabs. Well, when you have millions of red crabs on the road, there's yeah. nothing you can do to really stop the damage that's yeah. going to happen,
right,
you know?
Right.
So one of the things that they've done on Christmas Island to help maintain the migration route of these red crabs, they've created 31 crab underpasses.
Wow.
Underpasses, so under the road, and then a 16-foot high crab bridge where the
wow.
crabs literally crawl up on the
How
sides
cool is that?
Across the road. It's like, this is one you need to go look at pictures. Yeah, it's wild.
You have to.
It's
definitely
pretty crazy.
There's a couple of things to look up there. And I also wanted to touch on this as well. Locally, this has a touch as well.
Yeah, it does. So I didn't realize this, but actually in Portage County, there is a wildlife crossing. It's a underpass, and it was specifically created so turtles could mm-hmm. safely pass under the road and not get hit by vehicles, obviously. And it's been successful. It's reduced the amount of mm-hmm. impacts that mm-hmm. vehicles have had on turtles. So.
I think a lot of us, one of our rites of passage of getting a driver's license is stopping, pulling over, and putting a turtle on the other side
yes.
of the road, especially in that area.
Just be careful if it's a snapping turtle.
Yes,
I've ran into that.
Be careful of that. And that's a part of the reason why we should care. And there's other reasons why we should care as well, Anna.
Yeah. There's no denying, right, that as we humans are expanding our habitat, that we are going to have an impact on the habitat of wildlife around us. We're going to have an impact on the natural ecosystem. And that's going to lead to fragmentation like we've talked about before. And sure, we could turn a blind eye to our impact, right? But what a wonderful gift we've been given to be stewards of these resources. Wildlife is a resource. It's something that we get to appreciate when we're out on a drive. It's like, oh, look at that deer. Or maybe sometimes you don't appreciate looking at a deer when you're driving, right? But it's something that I think we can value. I think we can take appreciation for. And it's a gift that we've been given to advocate for something that can't advocate for themselves. Mm-hmm. So instead of turning a blind eye, let's do our research. Learn about things. Advocate for things. If you have an area on your property and you know that it's a major movement area for wildlife, improve that habitat a little bit. Plant some native plants. Make it a safe spot, especially if you're a hunter. Corridors are very, very important. You should look into it a little bit. Very good spot to set a deer stand. But if you see a spot, hey, there's turtles here. Advocate for a underpass, a turtle underpass, something like that.
One thing we didn't necessarily get to touch on that I came across a little bit in my research, so many of these things, that's how they started, grassroots, just a community member seeing something and going to their city and their board and their government trying to get this going. Yeah. It's been this has been such an informative and fun and interesting conversation, Anna. We appreciate it so much and very well worded to wrap it up there. Appreciate you. A society is judged in how they treat their elderly, their animals, their children. This is a gift that we've been given to show people what we're made of and show the animal kingdom what we're made of and work with them on this. And if people have follow-up questions, want to know more about what we talked about today, how can they reach you?
You can either swing by the extension office or you can email me at anna.m.james@wisc.edu.
Looking forward to the next conversation, Anna. Thanks so much for joining
us. Thanks so much, James.
Say hi to the team back extension for us.
Oh, I will.
We'll have more Midday Magazine for you coming up right here at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR. We are locally grown radio.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Mike Siegel joins us now to make our popcorn pick of the week. Hey, Mike.
When I was a kid in the 70s, there was no Walmart. There was no Sears was everything, from our tools to all our back-to-school clothes, everything else. Right?
Pants, stereos, kitchen appliances. Do you have pantyhose? Yeah, they're right next to power tools on the second floor. It's like you really could get everything there.
Everything.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
It is absolutely disgusting for conservatives to suggest that because someone is poor or struggling, that they lack judgment. If anybody needs morality policing, it's rich folks, for crying out loud, not people who are struggling to put food on the table and keep a roof over their heads.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR. Maggie Dawn.
Do you need some good news? I know I do. Next, I'll be joined by Terry Barr for what's good, local, and overlooked in Wisconsin.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Donald Trump has tapped Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to be his Health and Human Services Secretary. Kennedy has a long record of criticizing vaccines. Health reporter Alexander Tin.
FDA officials have rejected the claim that there are somehow secret troves of vaccine data that is yet to be released. And doctors fear that Kennedy's long record of questioning the safety of vaccines will undermine hard-fought improvements in U.S. vaccination rates.
Trump's selection of Matt Gaetz to be Attorney General even has Republican critics correspondent Scott McFarland.
Connecticut Democrat Richard Blumenthal, who was on the Judiciary Committee, which would oversee confirmation hearings of Matt Gaetz, says he has heard from 5 to 10 Republicans who are possible no votes.
Tropical storm Sarah has begun lashing the coast of Honduras with heavy rain. The Hurricane Center's Mike Brennan.
Biggest hazard is going to be the life-threatening, potentially catastrophic impacts from flash flooding and landslides.
CBS News Brief, I'm Cammy McCormick.
More good news for you. Community Stories Junior starts November 14th. It'll air on WFHR on Thursdays from 5 to 6 with me, your host, Melissa Kay. For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. Volunteers gathered at McMillan Library last night for the VRC training with United Way and Wood County Emergency Management. Ben Eberline with United Way led the training.
So tonight was just a refresher training for our Volunteer Reception Center members, basically to stay up to speed on everything that we need to do in the VRC in case we are activated.
This twice annual training prepares VRC members in the case of an emergency situation that would require a large amount of volunteers to be activated.
In the spring, when we do our full training, we will run through a full mock simulation. And so all the volunteers will get to take on one of the roles in the VRC and basically pretend and go through that simulation as if it was really happening.
The in-depth training will happen in early April 2025. School board member Julie Tim has filed a notification of non-candidacy for the 2025 spring election. There will be 2 open seats for the election in the spring. The other incumbent is Troy Beyer. Anyone interested in becoming